welcome you to another edition of Gateway to Baseball Heaven. I'm your host, Daniel Shoptoff, C70. It's Matt at C70 on Twitter. And with me, as always, Tara Wellman from Birds on the Black and the YouTube, and Tara Wellman on Twitter. Cardinals, they're doing the same thing. we hoped that last week, after we talked, we would have better things to talk about this week. And not really so much. Cardinals go into Atlanta and Texas and win just 2 of 6. And including a game today, which, as Tara and I were talking before we got started, was very possibly the worst loss of the year. And Tara, I mean, there were so many things you could talk about from today's game, but I think the biggest thing for me is just the fact that I'm not really sure why Jordan Hicks started the bottom of the 10th after pitching an out in the 8th and the whole 9th. He looked okay for those two innings, but it felt like you're just really stretching him in a spot where he didn't necessarily need to be stretched.
Especially with Carlos Martinez available, John Brebbia available, Ryan Helsley available if you want to give him the inning, and an off day tomorrow. So it's not really like they needed to try to stretch Jordan Hicks. I have no idea what the plan behind that was, other than perhaps Jordan hasn't pitched in like 7.5 weeks or whatever it's been, so you might as well let him, you know, air it out a little bit. But the problem for me is even less that he started the inning than that he stayed in as long as he did. I mean, give him one batter and he clearly didn't have it at that point. So then you bring in John Brebbia to do what he does, or Carlos Martinez to do what he's there to do. And you go from there, especially after the offense just gave you the lead in the top of the inning. And, you know, Dexter Fowler came back with that solo shot in the top of the 9th to tie it up anyway. There were just so many reasons that you kind of pull out all the stops to win that game. And that to me is why it feels like the worst loss of the year, because it's impossible to call any win, any game in May, a must win. Mm-hmm. This felt like a must win. This felt like, look, it's been a really bad month. It's been a really bad road trip. But if you can get out of there with a series win, you can get out of there with a come from behind win, a win in extra innings, whatever it might be. You set yourself up for that little bit of confidence, that little bit of, okay, we've still got plenty to work with here. And instead, you know, you're not only slammed back to reality, but it happens in a way that just really sucks the life out of everything that you'd built up to that point in the last couple of days. So, it's mind-boggling why they let Jordan Hicks blow that game, because they didn't have to.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, you've got all those options. You didn't have to go to a guy. You didn't have to worry about Dominic Leone or Luke Gregerson, who we'll talk about in a little bit as not really options at all. But I mean, you're not having to go to seven. You know, you've run through everybody in your bullpen. There are a lot of good arms out there. I mean, Ryan Helsley got called up this week and still hasn't pitched yet, as far as I know. So you know, there's fresh arms out there, and very good arms, very talented arms. You know, to continue to ride Jordan Hicks, hoping that, you know, there wasn't rust, and then that he can, you know, he pushed him into uncharted territory, right? I mean, I think they said on the broadcast his high in pitches before this game was 34, and I think he ended up to like 40 or something like that.
Yeah.
And I get that he'd had some rest, but that doesn't mean he's conditioned to go out there and throw that many pitches no matter. So
rest or not, there's some level of eye test there.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I mean, he clearly doesn't have it anymore. The fact that he can still hit 100 doesn't really mean that he still has control of 100 miles an hour. And that's, you know, you got to be, we always say they know more about their players than we do. But that seemed incredibly obvious as far as what was about to happen.
Yeah, yeah. So the loss pushes the Cardinals still further into fourth place, depending on what the Cubs do tonight, and they're winning right now, according to the computer thing that I've got here. They would be 4.5 back. They'll be closer to, well, they'll be game and a half behind Pittsburgh for third place. They're only 3 games ahead of Cincinnati to stay out of the cellar, who, and Cincinnati's, you know, playing better than the Cardinals are. So that, you're right. You can't say there were must-win games in May, but in 4.5, even at this point in time, is obviously not insurmountable, but boy, it just feels like this team needs something to turn it around. I mean, and you've got two games with Kansas City, and maybe that helps provide a spark, but you know, they need more than that. They need to, you know, win 4 out of 5. They need to win, you know, 3 series in a row or something of that nature. And right now, boy, it's just hard to see that this team can do that, even though they're just as talented as we thought they were. But for some reason, you know, when one thing goes right, the other thing goes wrong, and they don't seem to be able to put all the pieces together at the same time.
Yeah, and it's, I think, doubly frustrating because we've seen what this team looks like when most of those pieces are working together at the same time. I say most because even when they were 20-10 to start the year, we hadn't seen the best of the starting pitching, or so we keep being told. I'm not sure what the best of the starting pitching actually looks like right now, but that's sort of the idea, is that they were able to rush out to that great start in 30 games, even without the strength of their starting pitching. And we've seen what that looks like. We've seen how this offense can really click, but we've seen it pretty much driven, and I think I mentioned this last week, we've seen it pretty much driven by Paul DeJong and Marcell Ozuna. We haven't seen Matt Carpenter and Paul Goldschmidt. Yes, Colton Wong has shown up here and there, but no one expected him to be the driving force of this offense. Jose Martinez has hit every time he's had a chance, but I don't know that we expect him to be the driving force of this offense when you have Marcell Ozuna and Paul Goldschmidt and Matt Carpenter also in the lineup. Marcell Ozuna has looked pretty terrible again, and without him doing what he did in that stretch, all of a sudden you have a pretty significant gap in, well, a couple pretty significant gaps in this lineup. Fortunately, Paul DeJong is still doing what he started to do about the second week of the season, and Jose Martinez still hits a lot, but those guys can't be the only ones in that lineup that are hitting in order to generate the kind of offense that we saw in that stretch. So It is interesting that they jumped out to that start without the starting pitching, without Carlos Martinez anywhere to be seen, and without Matt Carpenter and Paul Goldschmidt really doing what they're expected to do. And now here we are with just a few pieces taken away from that mix, and we see that this team has maybe a lot more holes than we thought it did after that opening. But I say that, and then I can turn around and say, look, the reality is, if two of those guys get hot, pick any two of them, all of a sudden you're looking at an offense that can score at will again. So it's not as if the potential has evaporated in the last month. It just, it's one hit. It's one inning. It's, you know, even one at bat that seems to tell the story. And in this case, it's one decision by the manager, or the manager of the moment, as far as Oliver Marmol is concerned.
Yeah, and yeah, you say that, pick any two, and that's, I think, almost right, but I think one of those two has to be Matt Carpenter, just if, as it appears, the lineup is set in hard and fast stone, and nobody is ever going to be shifted out of any position, which, you know, and that's a debate to have, right? I mean, this is the same lineup that, you know, for the most part, put up that 20-10 start, but it's not hitting now. Should you shift things around? I, you know, we can get into that if we want to, but it feels like if Matt Carpenter is going to hit leadoff, he has got to get on base and do more than we've seen. We saw a little bit of life out of him this weekend. Unfortunately, Paul Goldschmidt didn't kind of follow up on some of those things. But yeah, I just don't see how this offense really, really hits its potential if your leadoff guy isn't getting on base.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, we said the same thing last year, right? And then all of a sudden he turned into a hitting machine. But when he turned into a hitting machine, the rest of the team followed. It's not rocket science. If the guy at the top of your order isn't getting on base, it's not like that's the only spot in the lineup that matters, but it creates this giant hole. And it eliminates opportunities to jump on a guy early when, particularly right now, the first two guys in the lineup aren't really hitting very well. And when those are supposed to be, like I said, the driving force of your offense, it's a pretty big failure on the part of those guys at the top right now. And it's, you know, it gets a little weird when you start talking about where to move Matt Carpenter in the lineup, because it moves a lot of other guys out of position, perhaps. But, you know, at some point, you can only do the same thing so many times. And, you know, we said this about Marcell Ozuna, right? We said, I don't know how long Mike Schilt can run Marcell Ozuna out there every day, because he is a complete waste of space in the lineup right now, and he's not doing himself any favors in left field. And then he fell off the wall in left field and turned into a madman and carried the team on his back for a couple of weeks. And we all said, well, maybe Mike Schilt was onto something in having a little bit more patience with these guys than we would have. We said the same thing about Dexter Fowler and the same thing about Colton Wong. So maybe there's something to that. But at the same time, there's got to be a line there where it stops being patience and it begins being, I don't know, stubbornness. And that's not going to work when you're already 4.5 games behind in a division that we continue to say is going to be close all the way through the year.
Yeah, I mean, and you can't let yourself fall too far behind in this division, because, you know, best case scenario, really, you're going to be treading water the rest of the way. Well, these teams may beat up on each other, but if that's the case and you're 4.5, 5.5, 6.5 back now, it becomes very much hard to do that, because you are going to be playing those teams and they're going to be beating you and you're going to be beating them. And so, again, you don't. It's not impossible, but it's not where you want to be. I get the idea you're being patient with your players, and I get that there is value there. What have we said forever on Colton Wong? He needs to play every day and things like that, and that's what he's doing. But it feels like there's a difference between, hey, we're going to run you out there, and hey, we're going to run you out there at the 7 or 8 position all the time. I'm not saying that Mike Schilt is making a decision just because he doesn't want to tell Matt Carpenter he's going to, you know, move down. I'm sure that there's other, you know, better reasons for that. But if that is the reason that you're, you know, if it's just like, well, you know, let's keep our, I want to keep him, you know, in a positive frame of mind. We haven't changed from the prior administration then. I mean, that's kind of the same stuff that we've been complaining about for years. And I read, you know, Mike Schilt said something about the opener this weekend and how he wouldn't necessarily want to do it. And he had some look at it from a quantitative thing. But then it was, but I don't want to tell these guys that they're my guys and they can't pitch the first inning. And I'm like, you know, I don't really need, you know, keep that to yourself, Mike. You know, I mean, just don't tell us that, because that is kind of the same stuff we've been dealing with. And I hope that that's not what's coming out of the lineup. And I hope that there's this idea that, you know, maybe they've got more data and maybe there's a reason they feel like this is going to click. But boy, when Dexter Fowler's getting on base at a, you know, 400 clip, I don't know why you're not, you know, if you're going to be a statistically inclined manager, I don't know why he's not batting up there at the leadoff spot, at least for, you know, this weekend was a great time for that, right? I mean, they have the DH, just, you know, shuffle your lineup up, say it's your American League lineup, we're going to try this out, and, you know, if it doesn't work, you go back to your normal thing on Tuesday when Kansas City comes in. And if it does work, then you can see. And I think, and I'll ask you, did Harrison Bader do enough this weekend to get into that lineup?
Yeah, it's going to get complicated. We saw it at the beginning of the season being complicated because so many guys were hitting so well. And now it's complicated because the guys that are hitting well are not necessarily the guys that you would expect to be in that lineup every day. Harrison Bader is a bit of an enigma for me because he can have a series like he did this weekend where he picked up, what, like 6 or 7 hits, and that's great. He was a spark plug. He was great in the leadoff spot today, got on base a couple of times, ended up, you know, helping to generate a couple of those runs that were scored. And that's what you want out of your leadoff guy. That's what Matt Carpenter isn't doing. But then Harrison Bader will go for like a 2-week stretch where he's hitting .124 and, you know, you're still running him out there every day because of his glove in center field, but you're not getting any production from him at the plate. And, you know, that's sort of the line we expected Mike Schilt to have to ride as far as Harrison Bader is concerned. What we didn't necessarily expect was that Dexter Fowler would make a case for being the leadoff guy every day, and Jose Martinez would just tear the cover off the ball every time he's in the lineup. Not every time. I mean, that's a little bit excessive, but you get the point. It's hard to take his bat out of the lineup, which we knew would be the case, but when you are contrasting it with, say, Harrison Bader, who for a long time was hitting under 200 and striking out a whole bunch, it's even harder to keep Jose Martinez out of the lineup when you have a team that desperately needs to generate offense. So that's a weird way to try to answer your question, because I mean, I think so much of what you do with Harrison Bader depends on what the rest of the lineup is doing, and not just in that are there two other outfielders that are hitting better than Harrison Bader, but in that how desperately do you need their offense? Because if you can plug Harrison Bader into center field, I don't know. I mean, you can't really. This is where it gets weird. This is why I'm sort of workshopping this as I explain it, because you can't really make an argument for Dexter Fowler to be your everyday leadoff guy and then say, well, when Harrison Bader plays, Dexter Fowler's not going to play. that's a weird case to try to make. But then, you know, how do you take Jose Martinez out of the lineup? So it's a strange dynamic. Having the DH this weekend eliminated that a little bit, and you saw that, you know, all three of those guys had their moments. Even Marcelo Zuna had his moments, drove in a couple of runs. Not like he did, you know, in that stretch we were talking about earlier, but, you know, all four guys contributed this weekend. You cannot play all four of them every night, and how you sort of break that up and make sure that everyone's getting enough playing time to stay sharp, but you're also getting the specific contributions that you need the most in the moment. I do not envy Mike Schild in trying to come up with the right formula there.
No, and, you know, I don't know what the answer is either. I pull it up, Jose, because I thought Jose was slowing down a little bit. He's still hitting pretty well over the last 10 games. He's just not hitting for any power, which is a little bit. And I guess, right. You know, that's kind of what we're seeing all the way around, right? I mean, like you said, it'd be nice if somebody went ahead and turned Paul Goldschmidt's calendar over a little bit and let him get onto that tear that he had from June and on last year. Because, again, it's early, but if you had told people that these are the numbers that you'd have out of Paul Goldschmidt right now, I don't think people would be just clamoring for him to get that extension, even though now he's already got it. He's not been the transformative guy that we thought he was going to be.
And that's the part of it that's the most frustrating to me. Not that he's typically a slow starter. I get that. But the problem is the Cardinals needed a bat in the lineup that would create a fear factor. And he's not. He just isn't. And maybe he will be from June on, and we'll all forget that May even happened by the end of this. But in the stretch where the Cardinals most desperately need that transformative bat, they don't have it. It's not Marcelo Zuna. It's not Paul Goldschmidt. It's not Matt Carpenter. So all of a sudden you're looking at this lineup going, man, we thought that we really had something here because Paul Goldschmidt fit into it. And he's pretty much a non-factor right now. And that's, like, I get it. It's early. It's May. It's whatever. He's a slow starter. I get all of that. I understand all of that. But when you look at what the Cardinals need, they need the Paul Goldschmidt of June on in this stretch in May, and he just hasn't been there.
Yeah. And, I mean, and you could say the same thing somewhat about Matt Carpenter, like we were saying. The problem with Matt Carpenter is that the underlying numbers aren't as good as they were last year, which makes you worry about what the rest of this year is going to look like. And if you have those two guys, you know, again, if those two guys catch fire, you know, you feel like you're going to just run along, although that starting rotation, you never know for sure how many runs you're going to need for them. But I don't know. I don't have a whole lot of confidence right now, maybe just because we're riding this 4-13 stretch and there's no confidence in anybody. But you wonder when that is going to click. You know, and again, Goldschmidt's adjusting to the new team and all that kind of stuff, but I don't know how long that excuse holds. I guess, you know, we're getting here to 6-7 weeks into the season, and I know it's a huge shot. I'm not saying that you can't say that right now, But there does come a time where you have to see that production that we thought we were going to see. Otherwise, everybody starts worrying about, you know, aging and all that kind of stuff, and then you're on the hook for 5 more years after this. So hopefully, again, like you said, hopefully we're, you know, come August, we're like, wow, remember when we talked about Paul Goldschmidt and he wasn't any good? But, you know, it's a long way between now and August, unfortunately. So let's go ahead, since we have kind of beat up on everybody, I think, in the rotation and the lineup now, let's move to the starting rotation. And we've seen interesting, you know, let's toss out Miles Michaelis, because yes, Miles Michaelis got destroyed in Texas, but those kind of games, maybe not to that extent, but they do sometimes happen. And I don't think anybody's terribly concerned about Michaelis overall. The rest of that rotation, Flaherty looking pretty good. I was really surprised Dakota Hudson pitched as well as he did with a left-handed lineup against him on Saturday. And I'm guessing that will, even if he needed it, pretty much cement him for a little bit longer. But, yeah, do you think that Hudson is learning something, or was that just, you know, kind of a little smoke and mirrors there?
I don't know. I mean, I need to see him do something like that more than once before I feel like he's learned a whole lot, because we've seen him go out there and pitch pretty well. And then the next time or two out, he just looks absolutely miserable again. So it was great to see. It was shocking to me that it happened the way that it did, in a great way. But, you know, I'm not entirely convinced by that one start that it wasn't the anomaly. But it definitely helps him keep that spot in the rotation, because I was to the point where it was kind of like, I don't know how long this experiment can continue because it's clearly not working. But the reality is, even in his bad starts, he's been basically bad in one inning and then fine the rest of the time. So that makes it really hard, I think, you know, when you're the one analyzing, okay, do we pull him out of the rotation or not? Because there's been more good than there has been bad. It's just the bad has been really bad and compounded in some cases by bad defense. And the results, you know, have come at a time where Cardinals offense hasn't been able to claw their way back. So it was a great start for him. I would not have pinned Dakota Hudson as the stopper in this series, or on this road trip, I guess, as far as the starting rotation is concerned, but somebody needed to step up, and it was great to see that he is capable of that. Now it's just a matter of duplicating it.
Yeah, and again, it probably wasn't going to change anyway, but that does probably buy him enough time until Alex Reyes is ready, and Alex Reyes is now, you know, cleared. He's pitching without the protection, and he's going to pitch at Palm Beach for a start or so, and then move up. But he's looking at, you know what, 2 to 3 weeks, probably, maybe not even that long, before he's possibly ready for the majors. And we'll have to wait and see what Alex Reyes is. Obviously, we continue to say Alex Reyes, like, he's going to come in and pitch like Carlos Martinez or like Jordan Hicks or somebody like that, and that's not what we've seen out of Alex Reyes, at least not this year. So we'll have to wait and see. But you know, once he's healthy, there may have to be a decision made, and you know, Hudson's probably bought him enough time till then, and hopefully he continues to. I mean, and maybe it's a tough decision at that point in time, and maybe it's not to go to Hudson. There are other options, right? I mean, you know, Michael Wacha still hasn't looked that great yet either, but I don't know what you do with Michael Wacha, right? I mean, you kind of stuck with him.
Yeah. Yeah, Michael Wacha's sort of a weird spot in on the roster for me, and it has been for a little while, because when he's great, he's great, but he's often not great, and you can't really rely on those occasionally great moments. You know, we've seen occasionally good performances from him. I mean, the first little stretch of the season, he was, I mean, low bar, but he was the most reliable of the five starters at the beginning of the year. It's not saying a whole lot, but nonetheless, particularly against the Brewers. But then that short little stint on the IL, and he hasn't been spectacular since then. But you're right, there's not a whole lot you can do with him. He kind of is what he is. He's a starter. He's not going to be a bullpen guy. He's, you know, not a guy you can send to Memphis. And I don't know what sort of value there is in a potential trade for Michael Wacha, because I feel like they probably would have explored that by now. So he kind of is what he is. And I don't really know what you do when you, again, so desperately need starting pitching. It's kind of like the Harrison Bader thing, right? It's not necessarily that Michael Wacha's been terrible. It's that the team desperately needs starting pitching that is going to be more reliable. Can he be that guy? And I don't know that we've seen anything to definitively say that he can't, but we haven't really seen anything to definitively say that he can either.
Yeah, and I feel like we've kind of seen over the last, I think, and I don't know how to say this right, so I'm not going to say it anyway, and nobody could say however they want it. I think to some degree we continue to think of 2013 Michael Wacha, and I'm not sure, I mean, he's had moments since then, obviously, but it feels like that's a long time in the past, you know, and he's got that name, but if it was John Smith, we'd have probably been clamoring, unless some people are anyway, but been saying, okay, the Cardinals just need a cutting, you know. I think that we continue to hope that there's that resurgence out of Michael Wacha at some point in time, and I just don't think it's going to come. Some of his numbers just aren't there. And, yeah, and then you have Adam Wainwright, who's his own special case of, I don't know. You know, somebody pointed out that I think by now his numbers now are, you know, his ERA, his FIP, and things of that nature are about the same or slightly worse than the ones from last year. He's had some good games, but the games that he doesn't, they get ugly quick. I mean, you can't do anything without a minor. You have to ride him until the end of the year, right? I mean, yeah, you could shift into the bullpen, but I don't think that solves anything.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with that as a solution is right now the bullpen's pretty good.
Yeah.
So if you're going to make space for someone in the bullpen, it better be someone who's going to be a more effective bullpen arm than what's already out there. So maybe there comes a point where that's the case, because bullpens are volatile and they are never the same at the end of the year as they were at the beginning. But at this point, it's... Again, with Adam Wainwright, he's been really great at times. He's been pretty rough at times, but not as bad as I expected, if I can say that.
Yeah.
I hope you're not listening, Adam Wainwright. Don't block me on Twitter. But I've been almost defensive of what has worked so well for Adam Wainwright. But the reality is, when you start to look at the numbers, when you start to see the way he's getting outs, I'm not sure how consistent he can be with what he's done so far. And, you know, it's great to have him as far as the veteran guy on this staff. It's great to know that he's a competitor who knows how to go out there and maybe get outs without his best stuff. That's what I don't think we've seen from Jack Flaherty yet a whole lot. I don't think we've seen that from Dakota Hudson. You know, they kind of do their one thing, and if their one thing isn't working, they don't quite know how to make an adjustment to be effective without their best stuff. That's what we've seen Adam Wainwright do time and time again over the course of his career, and we've seen him do it to some extent this year as well. So there's certainly some value there, I think. But again, when you're looking at a rotation that has yet to really establish anyone as a guy that can go deep into games, something's got to give at some point. And, you know, Adam Wainwright is a guy that everyone wants to see succeed. But if there comes a point where he's not being successful, someone's going to have to make the grown-up decision there.
Yeah. And the farther this team falls back, or if they do continue to fall back, you know, the quicker they need to make these decisions, because, it, you know, a lot of times it's that mid-June time, that early June when they make, you know, we saw what a couple years ago with the big, huge shakeup, and there's been other times where that's kind of that time period. But, you know, every game you lose now is a game you need to win somewhere along the way, or you're going to miss the playoffs again.
Yeah.
And, you know, for a team, I don't know, it's very interesting to watch this team now. And again, there were reasons for it, but to feel, you know, to hear in the offseason there's so much urgency about trying to get back to the playoffs, and then you watch this stretch of almost 20 games when they're flailing around and nothing changes, I don't know necessarily how to reconcile that.
Yeah, and I mean, for me, I guess part of the reason that I sort of flailed around myself in the answer about Adam Wainwright is because I still don't feel like he's the biggest problem on this team. Mm-hmm. I feel like there are other issues. And so to sort of target Adam Wainwright as the guy that has to be pulled out of the rotation, to me feels a little disingenuous when there are bigger issues.
Right.
Not that Adam Wainwright in the rotation might not become an issue at some point, but for me right now, I just feel like there are bigger fish to fry. And sort of just in general, as far as the rotation is concerned, look, I guess my point is Adam Wainwright is who I thought he was going to be. He's a fifth starter. He's not a guy that's going to go seven innings every time out. He's a guy that's going to go five. He might go six on a good day. He might go four on a bad day. It might get worse than that on occasion, but he's a fifth starter. That's who Adam Wainwright was always going to be on this team. The problem is they don't have a 1, 2, 3, or 4 right now. And I mean, they have five fifth starters based on the performances that we've seen so far. That's the problem with the rotation right now. So I said all of that so then I can say that, yes, it seems like if and we talked about this in the offseason. Alex and I talked about it on our podcast. The problem with this team was always going to be the holes in the starting rotation, not because they don't have guys who are capable of pitching as starters, but because there aren't guys who have done it repeatedly, who know how to compete throughout the course of a season, who you can rely on for seven innings every night. They don't have a Max Scherzer. They don't have, and not every team does, right? That's he's exclusive for a reason. I'm getting really worked up about this. I'm talking faster and faster and faster. But the point is, the Cardinals who know these guys better than we do, and maybe that's the problem. Maybe they're too close to what they're seeing because they know the potential. They know what these guys are capable of at their very best. We're enough removed from this that I can look at the starting rotation and see 4 out of 5 holes on any given day because of the possibility that they're not as good as we think they are. So the Cardinals have always needed additions to that starting rotation from the offseason. We talked about it time and time again, whether it was Dallas Keuchel or Gio Gonzalez, who, by the way, has stabilized the Milwaukee rotation since he was added to it. So, like, there are ways to fix this. And the fact that the Cardinals, this bothers me more than whether they, you know, what they do with Matt Carpenter in the lineup, because there are ways to go out and get starting pitching. And they're so insistent that their young guys are good enough that they're going to ride this train right into, you know, a ditch somewhere, because maybe it is that they're too close to it. They're too close to seeing what Dakota Hudson can be, that they're not willing to step back and say, okay, that's great, but that's not what he is right now. And what this team needs is someone who can go seven innings right now, and again in 5 days, and again 5 days later from that. I think that's all.
That's, yeah, that works. I don't know that there's really anything to add to that, so I'll just...
I didn't know I had that rant in me tonight, but there it is.
You never know. It's always bubbling up right underneath the surface, because when the team can't win a third of its games at a stretch, then yeah, there's a lot of rants that are possible.
I was due, as they say.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, after they've listened to your rant, I'm sure the team will go off on Kansas City and make them pay for it, at least in one game. We'll see about the rest. Before we wrap it up, I guess we should mention, it was kind of announced this week, one, that the Cardinals will be going to help open the new Rangers ballpark next year, Globe Life Field, not to be confused with Globe Life Park, which is where they just played, because... You know, I guess then again, since the Cardinals continue to name their stadiums Busch Stadium, I guess we can't really talk about creativity in naming. But they're also going to go to London. They're going to go to London and face the Cubs at some point in time during the season. Obviously, the schedule's not out. That will be interesting, I guess. I think it'll be a little difficult for us to try to watch the game at, you know, I don't know what that would be. I guess noon for us if it's a 6 or 7 o'clock start. So maybe it won't be. Maybe it'll just be like afternoon baseball for us, so maybe it won't be too bad. But if they play an afternoon game over there, then we're doomed. But I don't know. I think we've talked about this a little bit before, but I think it's kind of neat to have them be part of a series like this.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've said this a number of times, but I love it. I love the expansion of the game to audiences that can get just as excited about it as an American audience. And really, I think what it does for me is it kind of contradicts this idea that baseball is dying when you can take it to a place where they have to watch baseball in the middle of the night because they don't have local teams, and they still do. And, you know, there are so many people. I talked to the baseball Brit, Joey Mallows, last year, and he's doing his baseball tour this summer. And, you know, I've had conversations with other UK baseball fans, and it's so fascinating to watch an entire country sort of embrace this game that seems so normal and so natural to us, and to recognize just how many people can latch on to baseball, and you almost remember what it is that you love about baseball through their experiences all over again. So I love it. I loved, you know, the Mexico series and the games played in Puerto Rico. And I think that it's really interesting when you can see baseball in an international sort of perspective, because it really does emphasize that people love this game, and they love their teams, and they can, you know, pick a team to be loyal to from literally across the ocean and find ways to keep up and to stay informed and to help other people, you know, find their love for the sport as well. So I know there are some people who don't love it because, you know, it takes games away from someone's home schedule, but I find that to be a little bit selfish. Yeah. We can share two or three games with the fans in London because we get them for the rest of the season. So I think that it's a great opportunity, like I said, to share the passion for baseball and kind of laugh in the face of those who say that baseball's dying.
Yeah, I agree. Of course, it's easy for me, a person that only goes to one game, maybe a year, to say, yeah, give up a home game.
Right.
And maybe the season ticket holders, not quite as interesting on that. But in theory, I don't know that it works this way, but in theory, they should be at least a little bit cheaper packages that way. But I don't know if they get a deduction for that one game or not. See, given the way baseball likes to suck up money, I kind of doubt it.
Probably
not. Anyway, so yeah, I think it's fun. We'll see how that goes. Next year's schedule should be interesting with those two things, and I think they play the Yankees and Red Sox again next year. So, I mean, it's no Albert Pujols coming back to St. Louis, but it's something. So.
We'll have that to talk about pretty soon.
Yes, we will. Hopefully that's not the next highlight that we have to talk about, because they're still a month away from that. But we'll try to be a little bit more optimistic next week, if the Cardinals will do their part to give us something to be optimistic about. They do have two games with Kansas City, which, boy, I don't know. I hate to say you got to sweep those games, but you kind of got to sweep those games, I think. And then they got three more with Atlanta, so maybe that.
And Atlanta's hot right now, so.
Well, you only say that because they played the Cardinals.
True.
You know, everybody seems to be really hot when they play the Cardinals. I don't know if there's a connection there or not, but yes, they will. Of course, I think Atlanta's played better at home, so maybe when they're coming into Busch Stadium, things will be different. We'll see. With the 2 days off. I really think that doesn't play well to the Cardinals' hands, because they seem to lose a lot of games after the off days. So, but we'll see. We will see, and hopefully it's at least a shorter week, so we won't have as many losses to talk about next week. So we'll try to be happier by then. So,
no promises.
No promises, but we'll try. So, all right. So until next time, that is Tara. I'm Daniel. Good night.
Hey Cardinals fans, thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under podcasts and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.